Welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm Dr. Saul Rosenthal, a health psychologist in the Boston area, and your host as we investigate the incredible connections between brain and body. Our guide today is Daniel Pinels, performer, vocal coach, and social worker. We talk together about mental health and the powerful effects of voice on our well-being. Danielle, welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body.
Hello, thanks for having me.
It's great to see you. I always like to start with people's origin stories. So you wear a lot of hats. You are a voice coach, teacher. You are a licensed mental health counselor. You are a performer. How did all these things kind of come together for you?
Oh, good question. I started in musical theater when I was a kid, and I loved singing primarily, and then moved into acting in high school. I went to this, in Florida, they're called magnet high schools. I don't think they have them up here, but it's where you can have a focus on a specific thing, and I focused on musical theater. Then in college I went to NYU Tisch for drama, I took dance classes along the way. I started writing probably when I was 11 or 12 years old, writing songs, and, at some point during college, I was realizing I wasn't wanting to necessarily perform professionally. I didn't want to go into theater, and keep doing stage work, but I really still loved character study, and that really was about the study of being a human. And so I double majored in psychology, which then led me into doing volunteer work for the National Eating Disorders Association, and I got interested in doing mental health counseling, which led me to Boston, where I went to BU for that. And the BU school is mental health counseling and behavioral medicine, which I really liked because there's that emphasis on like knowing a bit about medications, the brain. From there, yeah, I mean, I kept going down really the trauma avenues, eating disorders, substance use, and then all of that kind of like led into more trauma work that I've been doing. So that's how I moved into EMDR, IFS. I love those modalities and helping people using those. And I'm also, yeah, and voice teaching too. I do wear so many hats, wild to think about. But in grad school, when I was at BU, I was going to an open mic in Newton, Massachusetts pretty regularly. And one of the guys who does saxophone there started the conservatory, which is a music school, and for listeners who are unfamiliar, and I was teaching voice lessons, and he kind of just brought me on. He asked if I had any experience, and I said no, and then he said, okay, well, you'll figure it out, and then I started teaching voice lessons. I've loved that ever since and started my own little studio online doing voice lessons. So, that's kind of where I'm at now. Yeah. I do mostly online work. I do individual therapy. I do support groups, and I also do voice lessons.
That is a lot. And I suppose I should disclose, of course, that you taught my child, voice, and was really improved it significantly. So it was a great experience.
Yes.
But sort of with voice and sort of bringing that together with the therapeutic work you do, was there ever a point where you kind of thought, oh, voice work or voice coaching can actually have a therapeutic benefit?
Yes, absolutely. Voice lessons unexpectedly have been a space where a lot of people tend to, in one way or another, start some therapeutic work. The voice lessons themselves can be very therapeutic. I will say some students are coming to me for very technical reasons and we're just singing, but I think for the most part, what happens is that people can really feel some self-expression when they're singing. So I've had some students who kind of know that they haven't been able to sing since they were a kid, and it's something that they really want to bring into their adult lives, and helping them find the confidence to do that. Maybe they lost that somewhere along the way. Maybe some kind of trauma happened where self-expression became not safe. And so learning to sing again is a real opening of that very delicate space. And so in the voice lessons themselves, the actual singing is very therapeutic, but also we talk about people's origins as well and what's happening for them as they start to sing. And if that's an emotional experience, really being open to exploring what's underneath that and what's coming up for people, and just having a validating space for people's feelings as well.
And as you think about voice and the other work you've been doing with EMDR or IFS, what have you learned about, or what do you think about the connections between voice and the nervous system and how we work?
I find so much a voice is about this kind of this is where I can express myself and say things. And oftentimes I find a lot of my clients have been through trauma, so that's what I'm drawing from. But when that trauma has happened, they have either shut down their nervous system. It's like a safety mechanism when it doesn't feel safe to express who you truly are authentically with other people. So in that case, it's being able to find your authentic voice underneath all of it and being able to share that with people who are safe and confident enough to share that with people who are safe. Sometimes that's the more kind of withdrawn, maybe usually an avoidant attachment style that comes with that.
Sure.
Versus maybe a more if I'm thinking of an anxiously attached person and they've experienced a trauma and they need to they almost feel like they need to over explain themselves. And there's this almost hyper arousal that happens. And it's them trying to make sure they are understood in the most clear way possible, because I think in that kind of a trauma situation, they might have been blamed often for maybe not being clear enough, or things were always their fault, so they feel this kind of obligation to explain, and what happens is they can over-explain, and that in that case, it's about helping them learn that they were clear the first time, and it's not them that it's not their responsibility maybe to have people hear them who are committed to misunderstanding them, and that tends to be the work with the maybe a more anxiously attached style.
Yeah, but I definitely want to talk with you more about that clinical connection. But looking at voice first, when you first hear somebody, if you're teaching, what do you notice about their voice? Do you notice their technique or their emotional expression, their body tension? What for you, what seems to be the important first factors?
Definitely. Oftentimes I'm looking at breath support first. Especially with a very beginner student, I'm making sure that they are taking, I'd call it a deep belly breath with a voice student, but in the yoga world, we hear diaphragm breaths, and making sure that the tension in their shoulders is not creeping up, or their chest is not the thing that's fully expanding, just really taking a nice deep breath before they sing. And that's what we call a supported breath in the singing world. And it's going to give you the most strong vocal performance if you're doing that. And often people tell me they feel it's a lot easier to reach certain notes, or they feel like their voice has more power behind it if they're doing that. So that tends to be the foundation.
Okay. And what about when you meet up with or work with somebody who says, I can't sing? Is that an anxiety thing? Is that a talent thing? How do you interpret that? Yeah.
Yeah. Oftentimes that is either, there's one of two things usually with people who feel that way. One is that it is it's a lack of confidence. They may have anxiety. And it can feel really nerve-wracking, I think, to hear your voice do things it may never have done before. And I think getting across kind of that mental speed bump of like, yes, your voice can actually make that sound. I think the voice is very precious often to a lot of people, and it takes a lot to get over that speed bump. And then secondly, I actually notice a lot in the physicality where not a lot of people know this, but like there's different resonance points. So when you're singing, different notes resonate in different places throughout the body. And that sensation in itself can, once you tune into it, can feel so overwhelming. Like there's all of a sudden it feels very vibratory, and that can also be a really like activating moment for people where they're like, what's going on? So either of those two things.
Okay. And when you're working with someone with their voice, whether it's trying to get them to support better, particularly for those younger students, or even people who are further advanced, do you think about the physiology? I mean, you're sort of the idea of resonance, where notes resonate in different areas of the body. I mean, that's sort of a physiologic issue. I'm curious about what other sort of physiological factors you take into account or you notice when you're working with students.
Yeah, it's being able to feel like that resonance. So like for an example, like where I might start with a student is, I'm going to make a very probably like weird, annoying sound to demonstrate this, but
it's all good.
All right. I'll go from low to high to low. I'll ask them to do a siren. And I can feel the resonance going up and down my body when I make that sound. So I asked them to tune in with that. And then there's a couple other things that come to mind where I'm thinking more physiologically. So one really cool, this has changed my singing life when I learned about it, is we have kind of, if you think of an X and Y axis, we have on the X axis, you have your notes from low to high, but on the Y axis, you have kind of the lighter notes are at the top, or the lighter sounding notes are at the top, and the heavier sounding notes are at the bottom. So to demonstrate that, I can sing, but I can also sing, and it's the same note. One is lighter, one is heavier. And what's going on is for the lighter sound, I'm letting my vocal cords be a little bit more relaxed. And when it's heavier, I'm pushing a little bit more together. And that's something that I work on with students that is so nerdy and fun and technical, but it helps with learning different styles and being able to sing different genres.
Well, most of the audience are a bunch of nerdy technical people. So,
excellent.
The work, I don't do that much work with musicians around that technical work, but there are people who will use biofeedback to help people manage or control different muscles that affect musicality. And that's exactly what you're talking about, is relaxing, opening up the vocal cords or tightening them, and different aspects of physiologic change. I kind of want to go to the macro question, though. I like to bounce around a little bit, I guess. For you, we're talking about these sort of, as you're saying, kind of nerdy technical issues, but what we're really ultimately talking about is creativity.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And so for you, what is creativity to you?
Ooh. I find that when I'm feeling truly creative is when I'm either when I'm taking in art and it's really making me feel something, or when I'm making something, and that could be a song, that could be painting, that could be anything that is just inventing and having an idea and putting pen to paper. As long as like my heart and soul is in it, there's just this kind of wavelength that I feel like I'm on, like in a state of flow. And to me, that feels like the most fulfilling kind of like moment to be in, is that state.
Hmm. Yeah, it's been interesting to hear how different people define creativity, because I think people use very different vocabularies, but I think it's all, a lot of it is centering around this idea of ideas that are kind of unique, but also being in the state, you put it as flow.
Mm-hmm.
I think that seems to be a really important aspect of being able to generate creative ideas, regardless of the, you know, whether we're talking about music or art or decision making of any sort. It does seem like that flow is really important. And then the ability to sort of wean out the less interesting or less creative pieces as well, I think becomes important.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, do you see creativity? I mean, is that something that people access, or is it something that people learn to recover or learn to allow? I mean, how do you see that process of creativity in a person?
Yeah, like I think probably more often for adults, it's a little harder to access unless we really intentionally put aside time for it. But I do see there's so many different sparks of creativity in people in ways that I don't know that we always recognize, where I'm thinking of people who do like marketing, like, and marketing sounds very corporate, but I don't know, the ability to like make a graphic design and make it speak to people and have, you know, the colors and the fonts and all of that kind of stuff. I think it's in our lives in ways that we don't always call creativity, but it's there. And I think when I'm doing voice lessons with someone, I can help them maybe like tap into that and notice like what that is for them. So that I think when there's an awareness that like, oh, that's the wavelength, and like, oh, right, that's what it feels like to be creative. There's a little bit of an opening to do that on their own, because that's ultimately what I want, is for people to be able to like have kind of like the door open to this in their own lives whenever they want.
Now, when you're teaching, you're using something called the one voice method.
Yeah.
Could you just sort of summarize what that is? Because I think it sounds like it's becoming kind of a real movement within a relatively small community of people. But so a lot of our listeners won't know it, but I really would appreciate if you could kind of just summarize what it is.
Yeah. For me, one voice is, being able to, I think, use your voice in a way where you can understand very specifically the dynamics that you use by default, and the dynamics you can use because you now know exactly what the tools are to get where you want to go. So what it does is it puts language to what exactly you're doing if you are belting a song versus if you are doing this kind of quiet whispery thing. And it allows you to have that clarity of like, oh, this is exactly the roadmap to know what I want to sound like, and then to execute that sound. It opened up everything for me. I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah, really, it seems like it's an approach that, and I've only had a short time to look into it, but one of the things that really struck me was, people tend to, I think traditionally are sort of you're an alto, you're a soprano, you're a bass, you're a tenor. But it seems like that really pushes that envelope and in a non-traditional way. How does it differ from traditional voice coaching or teaching?
Yes. Well, that's definitely one of them. I think of necessarily your voice range is the limit. We think of the voice as having different muscle coordinations. And so you'd use different muscles to sing in what people call chest voice. And chest voice, for clarity, is when you are speaking mostly in this talking range of the voice and you can put your hands to your chest and it's resonating when you're quote unquote speaking on those notes. Versus if I'm in my head voice and then there's resonance in my head and I can feel the vibration here. We don't necessarily think of those as their own individual. You either do one or the other, or your primary is one or the other. We think of the voice like fully as all of the range of notes you can reach. And there's little subsections where if you coordinate your muscles in a particular way, you can expand your range to go either higher or lower. And that's one way for sure that we definitely, I think, differ from maybe the traditional world of singing. Another really interesting concept, which this may be real into the singing niche world, so you can let me know if this is too detailed, but oftentimes between the chest voice and the head voice, a lot of singers call what it's the mix voice. They think they are mixing together the chest and the head voice sounds in order to create that mix. Rather than that, we know there's a range of notes for the chest coordination of muscles. There's a range up high for the head coordination of muscles. And in the middle, there's middle coordination where there's its own way that the muscles coordinate in order to create these notes. And I've found that helps a lot of singers, including myself, especially with things like belting and musical theater songs and pop songs.
Now, it sounds like it's an approach that really integrates a lot more of the person into the work. And also, I think, seems to help a singer find sort of who they are as a singer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
This may be creating a bad metaphor, or because I'm trying to bridge to another topic, but are there ways in which the one voice method informs your clinical work?
We'll continue the conversation with Danielle on the next episode. This is Healthy Brain, Happy Body. I'm your host, Dr. Saul Rosenthal. Our guide today was Danielle Pinels. Learn more about her at realtalkpractice.com and breakitdownvocals.com. Subscribe to this podcast by clicking the subscribe here link in the show notes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy Healthy Brain, Happy Body, please subscribe and leave reviews at Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Reviews help us get to more listeners, and that's more people who can learn about and benefit from biofeedback, neurofeedback, and other mind-body approaches to health. Also, let us know what you think by sending us email. Our address is healthybrain@nrbs.org. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Coma Media. It is a production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization, including our trainings, webinars, and yearly conference. All opinions expressed are those of our guests and not the NRBS. The podcast is not meant to replace advice from qualified healthcare providers. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is supported by the sponsors of NRBS and by the International Society for Neuroregulation and Research. Be sure to join us on our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.